Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes.
We're back. It's 12 after. Watching Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm very excited about having Arthur Gale back on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Arthur is the iron horse of the New York Times. He's one of the people that I call a witness to a century. He and a number of other people who spent the lion's share of their life and their career in the 20th century out there where things were happening. And he's the author of a new book called City Room, which I certainly encourage you to check out. Arthur Gale, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim.
It's good to have you back, as always. Arthur, I call you a witness to a century, and I think of that because I one of my favorite books is a book by George S. Seldes, which is somebody I think you may have actually met. I'm not sure, but
I have met him and I've read the book.
Yeah, and
Freedom
so you know the
press.
Book, and the book
Freedom
is actually the book is actually titled "Witness to a Century," and ever since I read that book, I started thinking about people who, like himself, of course, he's quite a bit older than you, and he's not with us anymore. But you also, even though you're of a little later generation, you witnessed an awful lot of the 20th century, and you saw it from the city desk, literally, of one of the largest newspapers, the greatest newspaper in the world, and so you witnessed an awful lot. And when you think about the 20th century, when we think about what was going on when it dawned, and what was going on when it ended, it was a pretty amazing, pretty magnificent century, wasn't it?
Well, it was. I don't think it could ever be duplicated.
Yeah.
In terms of the rapid dazzling events that this had beset us. You know, the first major story when I entered that newsroom was the beginning of the end of World War II, D-Day. Mm-hmm. I was only there a week as a kid. Copy boy, which is a kind of office boy, when D-Day exploded, and that was the beginning of the end of the European war.
Mm-hmm.
And then I very shortly after that witnessed the way the Times covered the atom bomb, which was our exclusive story, the greatest exclusive story in the history of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So I went from there. Through the Vietnam War and of course the women's liberation and the civil rights revolution, all those things happened on my watch. It was almost impossible to keep up with the breaking events. Not that events don't break soon today, quickly today. But they seem to be overwhelming and overpowering.
Well, there were so many first-time issues, like the civil rights issues, and like.
Well, the civil rights issue was an incredible situation, because when I started in the city room of the Times, you know, black people were third-rate citizens. They were treated like third-rate citizens. There were no blacks at the New York Times.
Not just typically the South gets beaten up for that, but that it wasn't. You know, the South didn't have
true,
a franchise
true in the
on
North.
That,
I mean, there was a lot of hypocrisy in the North because the North pretended it believed in the equality. But blacks were not treated that way. You know, in Times Square, for example, where the New York Times is situated, if a black man happened to be, this is in the 40s, early 40s, if a black man happened to be standing on a corner or looking in a shop window, a cop would come over to him and say and ask him, "What are you doing here?" And if he didn't have an answer which the cop thought was legitimate, mm-hmm. He would take his club and whack the man across the back of his knees, mm-hmm. And say, "Move on."
Mm-hmm.
Blacks were automatically under suspicion if they were just
in the wrong place
and relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
You never saw black people in any bars, for example, or restaurants, except in places like Greenwich Village, which was regarded as bohemian. So that was a true revolution, and it was fascinating to be a witness to that, because now, of course, the newspaper business goes out of its way to try to it's not perfect yet, but it goes out of its way to try to find qualified black reporters and editors.
Well, the entire society is still trying to get that the whole integration thing assimilated fully into our society. We haven't quite gotten there yet, have we?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, as far as the media is concerned, the most dramatic change occurred in 1967 when race riots spread throughout the country. Mm-hmm. President Johnson established a commission chaired by Otto Kerner, governor of Illinois, to study ways of calming the incendiary mood. And that report that was published found that the scarcity of blacks in responsible news jobs on responsible newspapers intensified the difficulty of communicating the reality of the mood in contemporary American cities to white newspaper readers. And it was embarrassing awakening for top newspapers, editors on top newspapers,
right,
who tried harder than ever to cover life in the black community, schools, hospitals, housing, black middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just become Metropolitan Editor at that time, and I went out, encouraged by my top editors, after reading this Kerner report, to find black reporters, and I brought some very top-notch black reporters to the paper, led by people like Charlene Hunter.
So you were instrumental in integrating the New York Times.
Well, I was one of the editors instrumental. Yes, I tried very hard to. In fact, when Charlene Hunter, later Charlene Hunter Gault, who was well known to television watchers, when she was hired, I hired her for the Times from the New Yorker magazine. I opened the Harlem Bureau for her. It was the first time we ever had a bureau in Harlem. And she said she'd go there on one condition, not to cover a crime, but to cover what was happening in the schools and what was happening in the hospitals and what was happening in the new black professional class. And that's what she did. She did a marvelous job.
Let me stop you for a second. We got to take a quick break. Folks, there are people in this world that when they say something, you should sit down and listen to them. Arthur Gelb is one of those men, one of those people. He's the author of City Room. It's a book I recommend to you. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It's a beautiful morning. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our friend Arthur Gelb, the author of City Room. Folks, this is an important work, and I certainly hope you'll check it out. It's still available wherever books are sold. Any particular website you'd like to that we can go to that you'd like to send us? I know Amazon has it, but is there another website?
Amazon is the main okay. The main place. Yes,
but you don't have
Amazon.com. Sorry.
You don't have a companion website for the book or anything like that.
No. Well, I think my publisher does Putnam. Yeah. But I don't have one.
And the last name is spelled G-E-L-B, ladies and gentlemen. Arthur Gelb.
G-E-L-B, right.
Arthur, let's move on and talk. I want to talk about newspapers for just a little bit. There are so many things that we have to talk about, and I hope you'll come back again another day, actually
sure.
A lot of other days, and we'll get into some of these other things. I want to talk, in the time remaining in this segment, I want to talk about newspapers, the future of newspapers. In the 20th century, the newspaper business really came into its own because of the increase in population of the United States. And I mean, I grew up reading newspapers. I have to have my newspaper every morning. I read at least two, if not three, newspapers every day. I love them, but I also know that I read them differently today than I did 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Don't you?
Well, the newspapers used to set the standards for news coverage because television was in its infancy. This is from now on talking, going back to the 50s and even the 60s. Television in its infancy let let the newspapers kind of they set the standards for what coverage should be. But now to a great extent, TV often beats print on a spot story, for example, mm-hmm. as it just did with the Iraqi war news.
Mm-hmm.
But what the change has been is, as a result of that, is to put the emphasis in print on why something happened, and in clear, good writing, exploring every aspect of the story within the realm of accuracy, impartiality, good taste, all of which has to substitute for the camera. Mm-hmm. I feel that newspapers set the agenda for this kind of coverage, and now I think the featurey aspect of a newspaper's front pages is sometimes influenced by TV's emphasis on the shallower aspects of pop culture, which can be quite ephemeral. The light side of the news, with emphasis on so-called celebrities, whose fame often evaporates as quickly as it appeared, such stories, might not have even rated a few paragraphs, maybe not even a story at all in my early days on the newspaper.
It bothers me to hear young people, Arthur, say that they get their information, their news from television because, see, I don't think it's either or. I think it's both and. I mean, I watch a little television myself.
I watch television
news, but I still want my paper. I don't want – because I want to read – I like to read – what other people say. I like to read how they say those words. I mean, how they write the words. It's not just the information. It's the way these people who are reporting, the columnists, the editorialists.
Yes.
I like to see how they write things. How they use the language. And to me, that's almost as much as the content is.
Yeah, but that's why, Jim, the papers that do not stick to the highest standards will indeed disappear.
Mm-hmm.
They will be outpaced by television and the internet. That's why the best papers, and I put the New York Times at the top of this list, which emphasizes all those great tributes of a great newspaper. You know, thoroughness and impartiality. I keep saying impartiality because it's so important. And good taste and accuracy.
What about partisanship? You know, almost every paper that people know about, everybody believes that paper has leans one way to one party or
yes,
the other.
Yes. Well, and it should be partisan on its editorial pages. A paper has to state what it believes in, what its basic principles are, what its political principles are. Why they're endorsing certain people running for office, but that should not in any way corrupt the news report. Mm-hmm. The news report must remain impartial. Now, that doesn't mean that a reporter can't go overboard sometimes, but a good editor will whip him back and make him stick to the story's content as stated with as much impartiality as you could possibly do. And that's where a good paper with good editors tries to stick to its guns. And that gives the paper credibility with its readers. It's a trust with the reader, a bond with the reader. The reader knows that. The reader understands. And if the paper slips and goes over the line in terms of impartiality, there is a great cry that goes up from the readers, and the paper quickly realizes it made a mistake, and if it's a good paper like the Times, it apologizes.
It has to fix it. Arthur Gelb, this has been a wonderful visit for me. It's a pleasure having you on the show, and I certainly hope you'll come back and do this again.
I'd like to.
We have so much more to talk about. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your book. It's very important, and we'll see you later. Happy New Year.
Okay. Same to you. Happy New Year.
Arthur Gelb, ladies and gentlemen, the author of City Room. He'll be back, I hope. We'll do our best to get him back on the show. We got a lot more to talk to him about. Quick break. I'll be right back with Karen Cortell Reisman. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. We skip the line.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.